This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs to create extraordinary success.
Welcome back to the Own It Show. I'm Justin, and typically you guys are used to hearing, and I'm Elise, but Elise is off today. And as we really dive into our guest today, he's a brother from another mother from the same land. If you know Canada at all, for all my American listeners here, typically I hear people say, oh, I know somebody in Toronto. Do you know them? And I was like, well, no, I was born in Edmonton. That's like 3,000 miles away, but thanks for asking. So anyways, with our guest today, he was originally from Montreal, and not too far from where Elise and I often go up and ski in Mont-Tremblant, but brother from another mother across the country in another land, and a guy that's really moving a lot of rocks in this performance enhancement and personal development space. And as we know from a lot of our past guests, the only way that you get into this career field and truly lead with passion is by going through a lot of stuff and having a story behind it and having some type of meaning that is able to be attached to this. So without further ado, Chris, I'm so excited to have you on the show and appreciate you spending time with us and our audience.
Justin, my brother, thank you very much for that intro. I love it when you said brother from another mother. We're both Canadian, so we're going to have a lot of fun, bring some massive value to these people out here and talk about all of this. And unfortunately, like you said, Elise is not here, but a little nod to her, hello to her. But yeah, let's just jump into it and just bring some massive value to your audience here in regards to high performance, peak performance, entrepreneurship, personal growth, and anything else.
I love it. Now, something that I've often wondered is, in it, for you to get to where you've been today, where did everything start for you?
Yeah. Honestly, there's always an origin story, and this origin story happens throughout life. And it's funny how life kind of goes about, like it prepares you for these moments, and life, universe, God, call it whatever you want to call it, Mother Earth has been preparing me to be a professional speaker and a peak performance coach without even me knowing. And kind of like Steve Jobs says, like, you cannot connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. And that's exactly what happened throughout my life. And let me give you a little story over here to kind of tell you how I ended up in this career kind of in a fast way. So at 8 years old, I was diagnosed with dyslexia. So for people that don't know what dyslexia is, it's a learning disability that has to do with reading and writing. And essentially it's something that comes quite difficultly for me. So my parents noticed it that I had dyslexia at 8 years old. They put me in a specialized school, and it was a difficult thing for me because as a young kid, all your understanding at 8 years old is that you're losing your friends and you're going to a special school. Nobody wants that. And I didn't even understand what dyslexia was at that point. As I went through that school, got into it, started succeeding, got more confident, figured out what are the proper methodologies, techniques that I need to succeed as a dyslexic. At the end of the high school, just like anybody, you look at what's next. What career am I going to go into? The first thing, Justin, that came into my mind is I want to be a lawyer because I like wearing nice suits. I like talking. I'm like, yeah, this is it. I started looking into that career a bit more, and I realized like 95% of the job is reading and writing. So being dyslexic, I'm like, nah, I don't want to do that. Let me find something that doesn't have a lot of reading and writing. So I actually went into becoming a fireman, which was a true, true, true joy as well. The big fire trucks, the boys, the adrenaline, helping others. Like, it was a great thing. Throughout that process that I started becoming a fireman and I got my degree, the academy, started working at Pratt & Whitney Canada to become an industrial fireman. Justin, there was something within me that was calling me to be an entrepreneur. I remember when I was in school and the teacher used to come into the classroom and say, kids, put yourself on teams. Even before the teacher finished the word three, I had my head up and I was looking for who reads the best, who writes the best. Let's put a team together. Let me delegate the work. That's delegation 101. That's entrepreneurship. I didn't even know that I was getting ready for it. When I was in college and I was failing my grades, I used to go see the teacher afterwards, the professor, and I used to negotiate my grade up. Negotiation 101. So all these things that my life has been preparing me for to be an entrepreneur, I didn't even know it. And then once I realized it, I'm like, okay, cool, let's go into entrepreneurship. So I decided to go into brokerage to become a real estate broker in the greater region of Montreal. Started into that career. And as your listeners know, or your viewers know, entrepreneurship takes a little time once you start a new career. For me, it took me like a year and a half to 2 years almost to really work my face off to start succeeding in brokerage, but then I started succeeding. Now, there's a reason why I'm telling you this story. As I was succeeding and I was at the peak of my real estate career and I was succeeding in the traditional way what success is, the money, the car, I was in my mid to early 20s, everything was going great. My speech therapist that used to follow me in high school gave me a call to ask me about a real estate property. After a few minutes, she's like, Chris, how's it going with you? And I went on a rant. And Justin, you're pretty much realizing right now, and your listeners as well, I could go on rants, right? So I was there and I was telling, oh my God, it's going great, so on and so forth. And she's like, I'm the keynote speaker at this event put together by the Learning Disability Institute of Quebec. I would love for you to come and present your story of how you are a successful dyslexic entrepreneur. I'm like, absolutely, I would love to do that. Justin, that same evening, she sends me an email in the big subject letters, in cap letters. She writes, Chris, I don't think you should do this speech because there's still a lot of people that have a negative misconception of what learning disabilities are, and you might lose some clients. Now, I know she was coming from a place of love. She wanted to protect me. I wrote an email that same day, and I'm like, listen, I'll call you Monday to talk about it. This was Friday. And I'm like, I still think we should do this speech. Monday rolls around, give her a call. I'm like, Bridget, listen, if I don't do the speech, I'm not helping the kids that are on the school benches right now. I'm not helping the next generation. I'm not helping my future kids because this is something hereditary. I'm like, I would be somebody fake. I'm not fake. I need to do this speech. And if ever there's a client that doesn't want to work with me because I'm dyslexic, those aren't clients that I want to work with. And she's like, oh my God, absolutely. That's what I thought. I just wanted to come from you. I didn't want to make you like do something you weren't comfortable with. I'm like, 100%. Let's do the speech. Justin, she told me there's going to be about 200 people at this speech. Granted, at that point in my life, I had never done a speech. I didn't know anything about it. I prepared for it, but didn't know much about it. The day of the event comes, I open the door. I look left and right. Brother, there isn't 200 people. It's more like 1,000 people. At this point, my heart is beating. I am sweating bullets. I'm like, what the heck did I get myself into? I'm sitting down, speaker after speaker is coming up with like doctorates, with this and that. I'm like, why the hell am I here? And then this moment comes about, they're like, Chris, please come on stage and present us your story. And then there was this divine moment on stage that I truly understood. My whole life has been preparing me to get on stage and help others through my story, teach others through high performance, peak performance, entrepreneurship, and beyond. And that's how I got introduced to the speaking and coaching world. I had no idea about this industry, but that one pivotal moment for me shifted my life. And I left everything that I had cultivated and built within my real estate business. Everybody thought I was crazy. I was going in an industry that not a lot of people are aware of, but I knew that that was my true calling. So that's how I ended up being a professional speaker and a peak performance business and life coach.
Chris, what was it like when you stepped on stage and the reaction of the audience after you told your story?
Honestly, brother, I didn't even notice it until after I rewatched it and the people that were in the stands, my family and my close friends told me throughout like that 20-minute speech. And this was actually in French, like I said, from being from Montreal, and it's on my YouTube channel, one of the first videos out there. I had like 3 standing ovations during the speech, which I didn't even know. Some people were crying. Some people were laughing throughout the whole story. And then afterwards, as soon as I got off stage, like I said, I was the last speaker. There was a lineup of, let's say, about 20 minutes of people that wanted to shake my hand and give business cards. That's where I met the Ministry of Education for the first time, did a project with them to reform the education of Quebec. That's where I met people from the newspaper, Le Devoir. They did an article about me. And that's where my speaking career started. So that's the reaction I got, which was very visceral and positive. In fact, at that point, I had hired my head coach, I call him, which I still work with him, Trevor. I had hired him a week before we started doing that speech. And I hired him for him to make me an even better real estate broker. The guy's from Vancouver, doesn't speak a lick of French. He watched that full speech and he's the one that told me, Chris, you hired me for you to become a top-end broker. He's like, that's not what we're going to do. He's like, you're meant to be one of the greatest keynote speakers of our modern time. I'm like, Trevor, what are you talking about? Can I even make a career out of this? Like, I'm succeeding here. Is there something to be done here? He's like, yeah, not only are you going to make a career, he's like, you're going to be one of the top ones. So that's the reaction that I got. And that reaction kind of fueled my energy towards this career.
It's not easy to be able to stand on stage, tell your story, dive into that vulnerable aspect of what exists. And so what did you have to start tapping into yourself internally to be able to own your story, own who you were, own the privilege that you were given to be able to carry this flag for people who weren't able to do that? What steps did that require from you? And what did it take to overcome the fear and the vulnerability that maybe existed deep down that could have potentially held you back from diving in there?
Justin, that is such a great question. I'm going to answer it in twofold. Okay, I'm going to give you the actual step-by-step, and then I'm going to give you the more practical way of how to go on stage for people that want to be more eloquent when they're speaking, public speaking, have to speak to their clients or whatever the case is. Now, the first part of that answer would be, it took me my whole life. What do I mean? Like I said, when I got diagnosed with dyslexia at 8 years old, the first part, I didn't understand what dyslexia is. Once I got into the specialized school, I started understanding what I needed and all that, and how to deal with it, started becoming more comfortable with it. Then at the end of my high school, I wanted to become a professional. I was shy about my dyslexia. I didn't want my peers to know it. I didn't want the other people to know it, so they wouldn't think less of me. And then as I started succeeding and started talking about it, I got to that tipping point, which was that speech in itself, that I had went through enough failures and successes in my life that I was confident enough to speak about it. So it's not something that happened overnight. It is a process. And that's what it is for anybody that goes only through any challenge, call it whatever. And mine is dyslexia. Yours can be X, Y, and Z, but it's a process. So first of all, you have to acknowledge the fact that there's a process, and that only gets towards the right directions by compounding success over success and understanding with a different framework, with a different perspective of like, hey, I could succeed at this. Even though I fail, it's one step back and then I could take two forward. So that's one way to kind of really explain it. It's a process and it takes X amount of time. The second way, if you're talking about more specific, like how do you become more comfortable on stage? Number one thing I would say is you have to know your content in and out, which means preparation. The example I could give, Justin, I'm sure you've done an exam when you were younger and there was this weekend that you studied for the exam like crazy and you were ready Monday morning for that particular exam. And you were probably excited to do that exam because you were so ready for it, right? And you're like, let's go. I'm so excited to just destroy this exam and get a good grade. That same scenario, but instead of doing the studying during the weekend, you went out, you did this, you did that, you did everything other than studying. When Monday rolled around, you were like, oh my God, you were dreading it because you knew what the result was going to be. So if you want to be ready for a speech and to be the most confident and comfortable, it's practice. So if you know your speech in and out, you structure it in a certain way, and you've left room enough to do storytelling and so on and so forth, you're so much more confident. One. Second practical tip I would give is acknowledge the emotions that you're feeling and give a different perspective to those emotions. Like I said, when I walked into that room and I saw 1,000 people, first and foremost, my heart started beating. I started sweating. I started like my hands were a bit more wet. But that same emotion can be correlated to excitement. When you get excited, what happens? Your heart starts beating. When you get excited, what happens? Your hands are a bit more moist. So instead of telling myself I was nervous, I told myself I was excited. Once you tell yourself that, your brain starts associating it to excitement, starts creating serotonin and dopamine, which is the happy drug, instead of anxiety and stress. So those are two practical ways that I would suggest for people to really control and be their own when it comes to going on stage or taking any type of communication in front of people.
I want to dive into the neurological practices a little bit, because the way in which our brain works, the way in which we function neurologically is an amazing phenomenon. Our brains are these incredible organs that really just sustain life, but also maintain emotion, maintain decisions, maintain the way in which we react to things. And quite frankly, we know that off of experiences, we're the only creatures that tie meaning to those things. Mm-hmm. And so undoing a lot of past traumas, undoing a lot of past beliefs or past feelings that we've correlated to certain experiences takes some work and takes some practice. What in your experience and within your work have you been able to find is a great way to help somebody rewire the way in which they think, the way in which they believe, the way in which they react to situations that maybe in the past have held them back or gotten them results that were less than favorable?
spot on with that question, Justin. Once again, that is a great one right there. And 100%. I am actually a geek when it comes to brain science and understanding the biochemistry of the mind and the body, because if you don't understand it, it's controlling you in ways that potentially can be not malicious, but cannot help you out essentially. So you just mentioned it right there. There's a lot of limiting beliefs that people have. The first thing that we do is we have to spot these limiting beliefs. So it's clarity. Okay. Now these limiting beliefs can be given to you since you were young, from your parents, from the environment that you were born in, from your thoughts, from your experiences, from your failures, from the stories that you tell yourselves. So first and foremost, you have to spot them out. As you're able to spot them out, then you could work accordingly. So you have to look at what are the limiting beliefs that I have, the 10 universal saboteurs, and work accordingly. One. Second thing, you have to be able to understand when is the moment within the day that my mind could be the most auto-suggestible so I could give the proper information to my subconscious mind and then feed that proper information in the way that I want it. That's the two recipes. Figure out what's your limiting beliefs, take out the ones that are disempowering, and then understand how the framework of your brain works to feed the proper information, the positive information, the beliefs that you want at the proper moment. So it goes in your subconscious mind and then it creates everything that you need to be created within that moment in itself. So that's the two categories that I would break it up in. And obviously you could go even more in depth in how to do that in itself.
I love the simplicity of it in bringing awareness and then ultimately feeding the proper feedback loop. Elise talks a lot about that through her inner energy work, in which everything stems from awareness. The higher levels of awareness, the best leaders in the world, the highest performers, the people who have found consistency day in and day out, they've ultimately been able to come aware of everything around their surroundings, of how their body's feeling, the decisions they're making, the reactions in which they have to things, the patterns in which they seem to be falling into, either positive or negative. And because they've become so aware, there's not much that gets by them. And that level of focus, that level of simplicity of coming back to, hey, I have one focus point, and it's being more aware of my anger, or being more aware of my negative self-talk, or being more aware of my sad depression-like feelings, that what is the trigger point there? And I'm curious to find out for you, because I can't imagine coming up through school and how difficult it must have been being dyslexic, having this as your... people telling you this is who you are. You are a dyslexic person. This is the category we're putting you into. And thus you need to follow this path and trajectory that every other person before you has led. And so it's quite often why I hate titles for things. I hate putting people in boxes because who's to say that you have to be coined dyslexic? It's just something that you have, but rather you're also tenacious. You're also an entrepreneur. You're also hardworking. You're also creative. You're also intuitive. You're also all of these things that seemingly are trumped by this one negative. And so the level of awareness that even comes back to that, I think, is extremely powerful for people. And I'd love to come back to, when was it that it shifted for you?
So when was it that it shifted for me? Once again, I love the way you kind of brought that about. And I 100% agree with you on the question of labeling. And let me just talk about that labeling aspect and I'll tell you where it kind of shifted for me. And my ideology, a bit opposite to yours, but very similar, I'm just wording it differently. I have no issues with labeling. The only time labeling becomes dangerous if the person is not self-aware and understand that they are not that label, like you mentioned. So if somebody gets labeled and they associate everything within that label, positive or negative, that's when it becomes dangerous. Let me explain that a bit more, okay? So if I receive that label of being dyslexic and I'm like, my whole life, I'm a dyslexic, that's all I'll be. I can't read, I can't run a business, I can't this, I can't that, I can't that. Then nothing in my life would have been necessarily successful other than the parameters that they would have given me towards that dyslexic lifestyle, right? But like you said, there's so many more things. I'm creative. I'm a leader. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm driven. I'm relentless. So many more things that we could go and develop. So once you understand that you could disassociate yourself and you're more than just that label, you're more than just this person experiencing this three-dimensional world, then you're able to pick the labels that you want for within the activity that you're doing. So then you're multiversed, right? Now, that's a positive side, right? That's like one side that can be negative, but you could turn it into positive. Let's look at it into a positive side that then turns into negative. If somebody is a professional athlete, right? Their whole life, or since they were kids, they were becoming a professional athlete. Let's say basketball player. And their whole life, they're like, oh my God, you're the best basketball player, this, that, and the other. They make it, they go to NBA, so on and so forth. Retirement comes about. Why do these people, when they become retired, they go to a dip, they go to depression, and so on and so forth? Because they've associated their being of a basketball player. They haven't understood that that label is one thing, but they could disassociate themselves. There's so many more other things as well. So that's where it becomes really important when it comes to labeling. Understand that you are so much more than that thing in itself. If you're attached to that reality, once that reality is taken away from you, that's when you feel lost. So it's that understanding. And one example of that, God rest his soul, Kobe Bryant did that so well, is that he didn't go through a dip because he understood basketball is a big part of me. It was one part, but I'm something else. I'm a storyteller. I'm a father. I'm this, I'm that. And he's able to associate and go from one thing to another. So that's one thing I think that highly important when it comes to labeling. Now, when did I notice all of that? Once again, it wasn't one particular moment, but it was a process of many moments of me being afraid of something, then succeeding at it, and then realizing that, oh, wait a minute, I could do it. I just need to find a different way to do it. I'm not different than anybody else. I just have my different ways of learning. And then once those successes compounded one on top of each other, then I was able to understand at such a high level that I could truly, truly do anything that I want in life. Now, can I do everything? No, because we have a finite of energy, resources, and time. So I have to be very eloquent on where I put my energy and what do I become a master at, but I still have that ideology that if I decide to become as crazy as the Prime Minister of Canada and I put all my energy towards it, I have a high chance of becoming that. Now, am I going to become the Prime Minister of Canada? I don't know. It's not in my control because there's so many more people that need to vote, but I could position myself to potentially have a chance. That's what we can control. So I hope all of that kind of made sense, but that's essentially the way that I kind of approach it and really the ideology that click happened for me throughout those process of those years.
And it all comes back to how we speak to each other. Speak to ourselves. And mm-hmm. when I'll never forget this. When I was sitting in a room, one of the last years in my hockey career, we had, a sports psychologist come in and really kind of break down some of the ways in which this self-talk occurs. And about a week later, Jocko Willink came in and started, gave us a little talk as well. And the sentiment could not have been different. Whereas when the story was being told to us from the sports psychologist, it was that we had to put everything in a box. It had to be neat and tidy. It had to be so specific that if anything deviated, it would it could create unwanted stimulus that could change the way that we thought, change the outcomes, and ultimately not leave us in a performance state. Whereas, and I left going, man, that doesn't make any sense. Like there needs to be, we need to be resilient. We need to have a system and a strategy that is much easier because we live in a complex world. And when Jocko came in, he started talking about how do you speak to yourself? How do you, to be able to, if you were to go internal and become aware as to the voices inside your head and be able to say, okay, what just went on? What did I just say? And if I was to broadcast that on a loudspeaker to all my friends and family and people around me, would I be proud of what I was saying to myself? And would I be a friend to that individual? And 90% of the time, I guarantee you, the answer would be no. And the power that comes of it, of just simply changing the way that we communicate with ourselves, changing the way we talk to ourselves, because we live in this world that's ever changing, ever shifting, where we're going to make mistakes. We're going to have a difference of opinion, a difference of outcome, a difference of thought process. But if we can come back to and just speak kindly to ourselves and be empathetic towards ourselves the same way that we would coach somebody through something, mm-hmm. it's amazing to see how all of a sudden our actions change, our beliefs change, the feelings we have change. And lastly, the results in which we start diving into change as well.
Justin, let me dive into this real quick. This is such a delicious, delicious, delicious conversation that we're diving into right now. I love what you just mentioned. Huge fan of Jocko Willing as well. And once again, it comes to that self-awareness. And we're bringing back this because it's highly important. So that self-awareness of what is that inner dialogue that you're having with yourself. And like you mentioned, 99% of the time, you speak to yourself in ways you wouldn't speak to your worst enemy. And that's why having an outside perspective is extremely powerful. And I'm sure, Justin, you're probably in the same boat as me in this regards, because you look like a high achieving, goal driven individual, especially being like a hockey player throughout your years and so on and so forth. We are very hard on ourselves in so many regards. Now, an outside perspective, a great conversation with a friend, a coach, so on and so forth, could readjust you being like, hey, wait a minute, look, you're talking about this and it's great. Let's go ahead and go get those goals, go get those abundance, go get this success, whatever. But understand that let's tap ourselves on the shoulders when we have those successes, small or big. Appreciate those victories. And that's what, honestly, that outside perspective of a coach does at such a high level. I'm blessed to be coaching, like at this point, like hundreds of high-end CEOs, entrepreneurs, like C-suite executives, Fortune 500 companies. But I'm blessed to have 8 coaches and mentors in my life as well that helped me readjust myself, that helped me understand that inner dialogue with myself. And that's the place that is the most vulnerable and scary. When you're by yourself with your thoughts, that's when everything comes up. So I love that conversation. Thank you for bringing that up, Justin.
Totally. And I think even coming back and taking it a step further, we were chatting with a couple clients the other day at an event we were holding, and it kept coming up that something that people didn't realize was that everybody struggles with that self-talk. Everybody mm-hmm. struggles with the negative thought cycles, the negative thought tunnels, the tornadoes that come in every now and then that continue to spiral them out of play. And quite often, because we're all high performing individuals, we think, oh, it only happens to me. It only happens to me. I'm in this corner by myself, churning away. And there was this, there was this example that came up, and this was, the response is all of us as entrepreneurs and executives, we see ourselves as tigers, these people that are out working hard, grinding away, really just putting every effort that they can out there, but they're doing it alone. And when a tiger fights a lion one-on-one, the tiger will win 99% of the time. But when a tiger and a lion meet in packs, the lion pride will win 99% of the time. And in life, we have to travel in packs. We have to travel together. As entrepreneurs, we have teams, but we often think we need to do it ourselves. And you're going to get beat every single time. And so we have to treat ourselves more like lions. We have to lean on the people around us. We have to have coaches. We have to have mentors. We have to have advocates in our corner. We have to treat our team members in a way of quality, but we also have to lead ourselves that way, treating ourselves as our most important employee, giving us that self-care, that proper self-love that needs to come with that, give ourselves grace, treat ourselves with empathy, but lead with the pack around us so that we again can take down everything that does stand in our way.
Justin, I love that analogy. I'm definitely going to utilize it. The lion and the tiger analogy, it's just so spot on. And you mentioned it. That's actually, if you permit, I'm going to share this with you. This is probably one of the first things that I noticed when I started coaching high-end successful entrepreneurs. Everybody, even though they're succeeding, even though they're multimillionaires, even though they're CEOs of like Fortune 500 companies, everybody goes through self-doubt. Everybody has certain levels of anxiety and they just call it different. They call it overwhelm. They call it this, they call it that. And they think that they're alone going through that process. And then once you start working with them, you're like, no, everybody goes through this, and you normalize it. And then you understand, okay, cool. This thing that I'm feeling is not me. It's an emotion. You might be fat. You might be sad. You might be depressed. You might be this, that, and the other, but that's not you. That's an emotion that you're feeling right now. So then once you're able to disassociate with it, then you're able to see yourself as a full individual. So I love that there is that awareness. And the only way you could have that awareness is through, like I said, and like you mentioned, that teamwork around it like a lion. Because the reality is you have a certain amount of talent and skills, and you have certain things that are your weak points and things you could optimize. The best way to go about it is to build a team around you and get people's strengths to be like filling up your weakness. And then as a team, you go forward with so much more intentionality, so much more success, so much more empathy, and just so much more drive in itself.
100%. And it kind of leads me to my next topic, which is in what we ask all of our guests that come on is we talk about ownership, and ownership being the sense in which you're able to own who you are. We talked about it earlier, owning who you are, owning your story, being proud of it, even though you know that where you were led you to where you are now, but it's not where you're going. It's owning that there are things that are still pitfalls, things that are still that you still are working on, that you're still learning. What is your definition of ownership?
Great question. Ownership is living in your light. Now, what do I mean by this? Living in your light for me means living your true purpose. I truly believe there's not one single individual that was put on this beautiful blue planet of ours without getting endowed of a gift. This gift can be called your light, can be called your purpose, could be called your talents. If every single person lives within that light and that purpose, which is essentially the thing that you do the best with the less amount of effort, then you're going to be so much more happy in life. And then you're going to be owning the true person you are. Unfortunately, Justin, a lot of people repress that light within them, calling it out of practicality because they have bills to pay, because they have family, because they live here, because this, that, and the other. And they tell themselves like 1,000 stories, and they repress that light. And while repressing that light throughout their whole life, they're slowly killing themselves. They feel unhappy. They wake up in the morning, they don't want to go to work. They feel like there's something missing. But if you truly own your true destiny and purpose in life, that you already know what it is, you just have to listen to your gut and take that leap of faith, that's when you live truly fulfilled. And that's when you're in full ownership of your true being and in your true life. That's the way I would speak to that.
So ownership is living out your true passion.
Your true passion, your true purpose.
Love it.
And as you do that, you're owning life. I don't even know another way to say it other than at a certain point when I truly walked into the thing that I'm doing, I thought it was so unfair how happy I am. It sounds crazy and it sounds even maybe cocky, but it's not. I was just like in so much pain of seeing people around me do something they hate in such a visceral way. And I'm like, why am I so happy? So this is my like purpose in life, to do these things, to come and have these great conversations with you, to do the coachings, to go speak in front of thousands of people every single day and whatever the case is, because I just want people to live in their light. This is my light. Like, I don't know if you guys are noticing, I'm having fun up here. Like, I'm truly living my purpose. Your light can be I'm cutting the grass. Your light could be I'm a great parent. Your light could be I'm an amazing teacher. Your light could be I'm a podcast, whatever it is. But if you're doing it at such a high level, then you're truly living your own life and you're owning it at the highest level. Nobody else owns it. It's not your parents. It's not society. It's not school. It's not X, Y, and Z.
I love it. No, it's exactly what we talk about all the time. And you reflect that very deeply. And so Chris, where can people find you? Where can people engage more with you and see some more of your content and what it is that you have to offer?
Yes. Thank you, Justin. Really appreciate that. The best place that you could go, reach out to me, obviously on all socials at Christopher Dedian. My family name is Dedeyan. I would suggest to go check out my YouTube channel. I have a lot of content on personal development, peak performance, and entrepreneurship, as well as my Instagram. And if you guys are interested to potentially make me come in, speak to your team for a speaking event or to coach you on my one-on-one executive coaching programs, you go on my website at DedianEnterprises.com. So DedianEnterprises.com. And then you could go fill up a little invite to potentially me or my team connect with you and see how we can collaborate together in the future to really get you to that next level.
I love it.
Absolutely fantastic. So guys, as we look out on where we're going, I know we're coming into the end of Q4 here. There's only 4 weeks before 2022. And the question becomes is, what are you going to do in order to step into that light? Are you going to be obedient to your calling, or are you going to continue to live in the day-to-day doldrum, the stress, the strain, the misalignment, the disassociation that you've been living in for maybe the last 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 80 years? I don't know how long it's been, but so often or not, we just try to continue to stuff it down. And when we hear this calling, when we are put in certain situations, there are certain things that are just innate to us that when we answer that calling, when we become obedient, when we create alignment and truly understand what our body is saying, we bring that awareness back to it. We can make drastic changes and, quite frankly, do so and truly own who we are in every way, shape, and form. And so remember what we talk about all the time, success is different. So you have to be different and own it.